This is a podcast from meow.net.
Meow!
Meanwhile, in an abandoned warehouse.
Episode of Meanwhile in an Abandoned Warehouse. My name's Owen Kelly. Last month, in the episode about several things you might care to think about for 2024, I told you that I'd be here this month with Sophie Hope. And in some sort of existential miracle, it turns out that I am and I'm not. This episode began from a question that Sophie Hope raised, which we then batted about using various digital tools. At the last moment, she realised she had a major conflict of scheduling, and that will result in a podcast from Rome at the end of this month. For the moment, however, it means that this episode is genuinely full of her arguments and her spirit, but sadly short of her actual voice. I shall therefore carry on doing both sides of the discussion without worrying about whether Sophie's sitting on Zoom disagreeing with me or not. Now, this episode is the beginning of a mini-series inside the Meow series. And as I said just a second ago, it began with a discussion that Sophie and I had, which related to several discussions that we've had in the past. We use an app called Twist for our group discussions. And when I wrote up a few lines of notes, Arlene responded by saying, "I'm not sure I understand this. I posted a cultural possibility yesterday to Facebook, Mastodon, Threads, Blue Sky and LinkedIn. I get the most response on Facebook. Is there some reason all of this matters?" I repeat this here to point out that we're not a united front at Meow, and also that I readily concede that Arlene might be completely correct. We can indeed worry about the tools we use to the point where we don't actually end up using anything. And we end up not communicating with anybody at all. However, I want now to try to make the case that there is some reason that all of this does matter, although we may not be able to agree in every instance how importantly it matters. This question has recurred numerous times in my life. One way in which it occurred has stayed with me for probably 40 odd years. This version happened at an event at Battersea Arts Centre in South London in July 1977, called Music for Socialism, when two very different views of what music for socialism might actually mean clashed heavily. The avant-garde rock band Henry Cow argued that socialism should produce its own socialist music, rooted in and developed out of musician-controlled production. This music should be socialist in form as well as in content. On the other hand, a group called the People's Liberation Music, a group formed by Cornelius Cardew and John Tilbury, amongst others, argued that music should serve the politics and not vice versa. In other words, as far as I could hear from what they were saying, what the workers needed was a good tune with political lyrics that they could sing on their marches. The argument boiled down to the question of whether the way we do something has any effect on what we're trying to achieve. Do we need to develop new ways of doing things, or are we better off just rewriting the lyrics to "We Will Rock You"? Should we, for example, try to get a record contract with a major label, or should we abandon that quest and start our own independent and collectively run label? Similarly, should we start our own social networks, or should we just accept that people use Facebook and start a group there? For better or worse, as I said, this is an argument I've looked at many times before. I organised a series of workshops with Pixelink, for example, in Helsinki in 2018, under the banner Convivial Mechanics, to look at finding digital tools we could trust. This grew into a group called Social Tools with Aga, Ilpo and Oliver, and that group still meets regularly 4 or 5 years later, although not necessarily frequently, since we all have many other projects we participate in. Indeed, it was at the first Social Tools Conference, organised primarily by Oliver and Ilpo, that Sophie and I first met and conceived the idea that became Meow.net. In Community Art and the State, in Chapter 6, I posed a version of the question that I'm discussing now by pointing out that some community activists, including many community artists, have suggested that this lack of neutrality can be used to advantage. They argue that the state can, in effect, be turned round like a cannon and made to fire the other way. The working class can take over the state and then use it to do what they want, to get rid of oppression and equality. I do not believe that this is possible in theory or in practice. The state is not a machine whose organisation can change hands, or whose ownership can change hands, and nor is it some kind of structure which can be vacated by one side and subsequently occupied by the other. It is at once a system of relationships and a series of agencies acting on those relationships. These relationships are a major determining factor on our lives and place limitations and constraints on our expectations. In other words, tools are designed for specific purposes, and you cannot simply repurpose them to try to make them do something else. We can see this with the recent media discovery that using your phone all the time and processing your life through social media affects how you feel and think. Dopamine, journalists mutter. It's all about the dopamine. We must stop using digital tools. This move from A to B, from up to down, is not necessary. It's a deliberate oversimplification that blurs the fact that there is an enormous grey area in which most of us live most of the time. The tools we've used have changed a lot over the last 30 years, since the creation of the World Wide Web. The digital tools we use have changed subtly, step by step, as monopoly capitalism has re-centralised the web and the jumble of communications it used to hold in the form of carefully ring-fenced social media apps. Cory Doctorow has referred to this process as one of enshittification, and we looked at this in episode 65 last September. To remind you, knowyourmeme.com defines enshittification as the point where an online platform becomes more monetized and less user-oriented the longer it lasts. The term was theorized by Canadian writer and thinker Cory Doctorow to describe the trajectory of platforms like TikTok, Amazon, and Twitter. He argued that platforms start out serving users by offering features that lure them in. Then they serve advertisers and third parties by offering ad targeting and deals. And lastly, they serve themselves and their shareholders by cheating and exploiting both advertisers and users. This is the process Cory Doctorow calls enshittification. And this is the process we've suffered with the tools we use for communicating digitally and the tools we use for creating work individually or collaboratively. So there are actually two parts to this question, and they concern how we present ourselves digitally and how we work digitally on our own or with others. The second part concerns the use of tools like Dropbox, Google Docs, Microsoft Word, Zoom, and so on. Here, we might look at what we do and ask if we can find better tools, by which I mean tools that suit our purposes better. If we can find more congruent tools, then we might want to see what we would have to do to switch to them. If we can't find congruent tools, then we might have to shrug our shoulders, carry on using our current tools, and resolve to keep our ears open for news of something appearing in the future that might serve us better. These will not always be easy choices, and I'm certainly no better than most people in making them. For example, I've found it very difficult to move away from Dropbox, even though I know there are reasons to do so, especially since it has most definitely begun travelling down the road to enshittification, as I will explain in part of the next episode. I have already identified the alternative, but I'm still undecided whether switching will be worth the hassle and whether the alternative will prove as reliable in the long term. I'm going to look at this kind of problem in the next episode and also explain in some detail what I mean by suiting us better when we come to look at the range of tools on offer. For the moment, let us just look at our personal and group presence online, which has shifted dramatically, whether we realise it or not, since the web began. Tim Berners-Lee invented the World Wide Web while working at CERN in 1989. He proposed a universal linked information system using several concepts and technologies, the most fundamental of which was the connection that existed between information. He developed the first web server, the first web browser, and a document formatting language called Hypertext Markup Language. That's HTML to you and I. After publishing this markup language in 1991 and releasing the source code for the browser for public use in 1993, many other web browsers were soon developed, with Mark Andreessen's Mosaic, which later became Netscape Navigator, being particularly easy to use and install, and often credited with sparking the internet boom of the early 1990s. Mosaic was a graphical browser which ran on several popular office and home computers and brought multimedia content to non-technical users by including images and text on the same page. This led to one of the numerous 20th century DIY cultural revolutions, alongside things like cassette-based music, laser-printed fanzines, computer games, and email newsletters. In this case, artists, hobbyists, activists, and academics began creating web pages, finding each other's web pages, forming communities based on what they found, and linking to each other's work in blog rolls or web rings. In case you can't remember, Wikipedia defines a web ring as a collection of websites linked together in a circular structure and usually organized around a specific theme, often educational or social. These, Wikipedia says, grandly, were popular in the 1990s and early 2000s, particularly among amateur websites. Not everyone sees themselves as a hobbyist, however, and we've become seduced into believing that convenience is the height of luxury, and convenience is something we should demand on every occasion. Social media began to offer a more convenient way to get online and to make yourself heard. Blogs, they argued, were old-fashioned things and hard work to keep going. Why not just create an account on Flickr, on Friendster, on GeoCities or MySpace, and let us do all the hard work for you? Once this shift started, of course, other products came in with even more seamless ideas that promised even easier access to the digital realm. Yahoo, which allegedly originally stood as an acronym for yet another hierarchically organized oracle, changed from being a handcrafted set of links to a search engine. And that, as a search engine, soon gave way to Google Search. This had the effect for an increasing number of people of them abandoning their own collection of bookmarks saved in their browser in favour of Googling a site they use every time they use it. We've been carpet-bombed with the idea of convenience as an unalloyed benefit, so much that we've willingly abandoned sets of skills and resources that we'd only just begun to develop. Instead of creating a communal space online, we've walked into the walled garden of our choice and then asked wistfully why we're not allowed to look very far over the fence. However, even though social media have proved irresistible for most people, blogs have never actually gone away. According to Web Tribunal, at the very end of 2022, the latest data I could find accurate figures for, there are more than 600 million blogs out in the world, among the 1.9 billion websites. Blog authors account for over 6 million blog posts every day, or more than 2.5 billion blog posts every year. This means that more than a third of all websites are blogs. Tumblr hosts the vast majority of blogs with 518 million. WordPress, no matter how much it shouts about itself, is a distant second with 60 million blogs. More than 6 million posts go live every day on average. And despite this, the people who profit from blogging are very few. Less than 10% of all bloggers generate any income at all. Recently, there have been several efforts to raise the profile of this blogging as a reaction to the enshittification of the major social media platforms. Matthias Ott, for example, has begun publishing the Own Your Own Web newsletter. And since Elon Musk began doing whatever he thinks he's doing with Twitter, the Fediverse has begun attracting serious public attention. We might note that the Fediverse is not the first attempt to produce an alternative or a decentralized social media platform, but it appears to be the most successful to date by a long way. Diaspora began in 2010, but suffered from being genuinely complicated to set up and almost equally complicated to maintain. Mastodon and other apps attached to the so-called Fediverse have solved these issues to a very large extent, if not yet completely. There are also other apps in the Fediverse. PixelFed, for example, offers an Instagram-like app. Lemmy offers a Reddit-like platform. All of these now have large user bases, although obviously not as many as Instagram and Reddit, but likely more than enough for your own needs. I say this because once, during the pandemic, I spent some time checking how many people actually saw my tweets, and actually saw PixelX tweets, and then looked at the tweets of a few other people and groups that I know. And the answer, without exception, was very few. Most tweets and most Facebook posts were seen by 100 or less people, and the apparently popular ones were seen by several hundreds of people. None of them in the groups or people I looked at were seen by hundreds or even tens of thousands of people, or even in fact thousands of people. So the idea that we're talking to the world is an illusion. A delusion that we've been encouraged in by people making profits from our participation in the free-to-use social media platforms. To go viral, we would in fact need exactly the same kind of support mechanisms that people needed 50 or 60 years ago to get their pop single into the top 10. We'd need a team dedicated to promoting us by whatever means possible. The idea that everything is different in the digital world is bullshit, served up by people who would have you believe that SEO, search engine optimization, is just yours for a few clicks and a few $100. The top 10 only ever contained 40 records at a time. And in the so-called attention economy, there are also finite limits. There are only 16 hours a day, which is 108 hours a week, for me to pay attention to everything in my personal world. The fact that everyone in the world can post on Facebook, if indeed they can, does nothing to increase the amount of time I have available to look at Facebook, in between working, walking, taking photographs, blogging, watching TV, reading, and so on. You are no more likely to go viral on TikTok in 2024 than you were to get a number one single in 1974. All resources in the human world are finite, including attention. And the idea of the possibility of infinite popularity is a con and always will be. If we're not talking to the world, because that doesn't even make sense, then we are probably talking to communities of interest, geography, or whatever, just as we always were. And just as the early bloggers and the early participants in forums like Well were. The WELL, to remind you, stands for the Whole Earth Electronic Link and was launched in 1985. This makes it one of the oldest continually operating virtual communities. By 1993, it had 7,000 members, a staff of 12, and a gross annual income of $2 million. A 1997 feature in Wired magazine called it the world's most influential online community. In 2012, when it was last publicly offered for sale, it had 2,693 members. I mention this to indicate in passing how long the history of our digital life actually is, and how trends have come and gone in that time, as they always do. The WELL started before the web even existed. Today, it's as easy to start a blog as it is to start a Facebook account. You can go to WordPress.com and several other similar places, start one free, and have it up and running in less than 5 minutes. You can also host your own or place your blog with a hosting company. And indeed, everyone at Meow has a blog or two or three, and has done for a long time. You may have a blog too, and be asking yourself, why am I saying this? Doesn't everyone know this? Doesn't everyone who wants a blog have one? What's the deal here? The deal is that the growth of slick design, and the growth of landing pages and calls to action and so on, has meant that most people have got rid of the old-fashioned bloggy stuff in place of a site that looks trendy. I've done this too. I minimalised the design on both my own site and meow.net because most people look at them on a phone, and because I taught web design and that this was what the students needed to know. In doing this, I, like most people, got rid of my blog roll and the web ring link that once adorned my site. They seemed so old-fashioned. My students would say, what's on earth's a blog roll? Why wouldn't people just Google things? In fact, they were very useful and very powerful ways of building and maintaining connections and communities. What do I mean by a blog roll, asks everyone under 40. According to the Codecraft website, a blog roll is a list of links to other blogs or websites that a blogger recommends or finds valuable. The blog roll can be displayed on the sidebar, footer, or a separate page of a blog. In simple terms, a blog roll is a list of recommended links to other blogs or sites. The blog roll can be displayed in a variety of formats, and its purpose is to provide readers with a curated list of links to other blogs or websites that the blogger finds valuable. It can also serve as a way for bloggers to connect with each other and build relationships within the blogging community. The important element here, for the current argument, is the idea of curation. 15 years ago, if you'd come across the meownot.net website and then asked yourself, tell me more, you'd have started by checking our blog roll to see what other sites we recommended visiting. Now, in contrast, you'd almost certainly just Google a term like cultural democracy and see what Google says you should look for next. 15 years ago, we'd have been acting as curators, offering to pass you on to other people we could vouch for. Today, we've outsourced that function to corporations who are concerned with monetizing your movement across the web and not with passing you on to our allies. Blog rolls were almost compulsory 15 years ago. WordPress used to come with a blog roll pre-installed on the homepage, just waiting for you to add links to it. Nowadays, that's gone from almost all WordPress themes, and where it's still present, it looks quaint. I noticed that a blogger called Jason, who runs a site called From Jason, has said that we used to know how to do this. Communicating, that is. Not long ago, we were good at separating the signal from noise. Granted, there's a lot more noise these days, but most of it comes from and is encouraged by the silos we dwell in. Somewhere between the late 2000s aggregator sites and the contemporary For You page, we have lost our ability to curate the web. Crucially, we didn't just throw out blog rolls as we hurried to lose our abilities to network in our own ways. We also forgot that sites used to belong to web rings, which I read you a definition of earlier. In a blog roll, I create links to sites I like in the belief that if you're looking at my site, you might like them too. In a web ring, a group of us collectively decide to link to each other and consciously form a community, a ring, a commons, if you will. which other people can join only if we agree. Web rings used to exist for all kinds of things, from the cultural to the horticultural, from a love of cooking, stamp collecting or travelling, to groups of people suffering from a particular emotional or medical condition. These web rings did not imagine they were talking to the world, whatever that might actually mean. They knew that they were building bonds with specific people, with specific groups. They were building community with those people and groups, and they were sharing what they knew with others who had something to share in return. We can take back these joys of discovery and actual connection quite easily. The tools to reinstate blog roles and establish web rings still exist. I believe that our decision to start Meow Monthly as an email newsletter was the correct one and has proved a much better use of our time than posting more and more frequently to Facebook or Twitter to try to improve our visibility. I intend adding a blog role to MeowNet very soon, and we look seriously at how and why we should start a web ring for the 21st century. If you'd like your website or a site you know and value to appear in the forthcoming meow.net blog roll, then please email us at monthly@meow.net and we will include it. We won't worry about whether or not we're building a definitive directory. We'll be happy to point people to a curated list of sites they might otherwise not bump into. As I said at the beginning, the underlying question we are addressing here is how congruent are the tools we use to the goals we have in mind? And a related question that needs answering, does this matter? I think I've answered this in part. The ways we present ourselves online have been stripped of some of their most powerful features, the ones that combined us together into communities of interest and lead to action in the world. These tools are all easily brought back into use if we can see why we might want to do that. Using the Fediverse means talking to a smaller amount of people than using Facebook, but only if you believe you actually have access to everyone on Facebook in the first place. Restarting a blog roll is a matter of a few minutes unless, like me, you've carefully spent days designing them out of your sites, in which case, again like me, you'll have to spend days working out how best to put them back. That's my problem. Hopefully you don't have that, and hopefully you don't have it as seriously as I will have it. These efforts will be worth it. These small elements will make a big difference. Next month, I will attempt to answer a further chunk of the question when I look at some of the digital tools we use to perform common tasks online or on our digital devices. In the meanwhile, please look at the show notes on meow.net website, because they're even more jam-packed with useful links and references this time than they usually are. Over and out.
Now that you've heard the podcast, please go to the website. There you'll find much more details about topics talked about, links to references, and much more. You can find the website at meow.net. That's MIAAW.net. See you there.